Chapter 9, Business Pillar 2, Your Business Model. You will either step forward into growth or you will step back into safety. Abraham Maslow. When I was a kid, I always had a side hustle. In addition to my summer jobby as a popsicle salesperson, I sold penny candy for an enormous markup to the kids at school. This was my business model. Sell candy during the school year, popsicles during summer vacation. I wasn't going to retire on that kind of a business model, but it worked for me. That's also the problem I see with many creatives. Their business model isn't designed to afford them the lifestyle they desire. They sell what they can and are grateful for whatever they can get instead of being strategic about their pricing and how they sell their offers. This chapter will give you some clarity on how to design a business model that provides for you and the growth of your business. In short, a business model is how your business makes money, your offers, combined with the ways in which it does so, your delivery system. This can be a multi-layered, complex web of moving parts and pieces, or it can be as simple as, I sell digital downloads on a website. It also includes specifics about the people who buy your offers, but we're going to tackle your audience in a different chapter. For now, we just need to know what you're selling and how you are selling it. More than likely, you'll find holes in your model. For example, if you're a painter, you might only be focused on canvas work and have an abundance of paintings sitting around collecting dust because you can't sell them. But canvas is what you know, so that's what you keep doing. I know an artist who regularly stripped and repainted old canvases because she didn't have a budget to keep buying new canvas and she wasn't selling what she was making. If people aren't buying it, that's a sign that something's amiss. You might also find that you're spread too thin. In my own business, I found that I had amassed over 100 different offerings in 10 years of working as a coach and trainer. If an offer needs to be marketed in order to sell, I could sell something different every week for 2 years and never need to create anything new. Bluntly, I didn't have the bandwidth in my marketing calendar to promote all those offers. Naturally, many of them languished in virtual cold storage for years. I had to step back and look more closely at what I was really trying to do, and instead of creating a museum of great ideas, take the very best of them and create a marketing strategy that worked to sell them. Before you go off cutting and culling your offers, though, let's just take an inventory and then take a look at how to move forward in relationship to your growth stage. Each stage of business needs a specific growth plan, and that will help determine what, if anything, needs to change in your offerings within your business model. Three types of growth plans. Early struggle equals transition plan. Remember, early struggle is a race against the clock to find a profitable, sustainable market for your offering. You need to match your offer to an audience big enough to keep the business afloat. Until you do, it's a continual struggle. Big enough is a relative term, but the idea here is that your great work has an audience and you just need to find one that's the right size to keep your bills paid with a comfortable margin. A fine artist creating one-of-a-kind paintings who can live comfortably on $50,000 per year won't need as large of an audience or prices as high as someone who has to make six figures just to pay the rent. Remember the six-figure distinction. A large candle-making company needs millions of units in sales to make a product viable, but a smaller company might do exceedingly well on just a fraction of those sales. That's exactly what happened in 2005 when one of the industry-leading candle companies stopped making transparent candles. A company I owned at the time swooped in and filled the hole the industry giant left behind. Because we were a tiny operation, we only needed a few dozen sales each month to have a profitable product line. Very often in this early stage, your business is either limping along as a side hustle or a jobby. Either way, it's not likely to sustain you without bringing in some kind of revenue from somewhere else. Otherwise, you'd be out of early struggle and headed to fun. The best thing you can do in a transition plan is to focus on a handful of offers so you can test the market without overwhelming it or yourself. The goal is to find one thing to focus on to move into momentum. But if you're a fusion, you'll be hard-pressed to pick just one thing. Regardless, a transition plan focuses in on just a few things, with the aim of narrowing down even further, not expanding into more, a lesson I learned the hard way. In the case of our candle company, we started this new direction by making a transparent ball-shaped candle, the size that was made popular by our competitor. We only offered it in a few colors and fragrances, a small offering compared to the wide range of scents and colors we offered in traditional wax candles. Again, we didn't need to sell many to be profitable, and we used that profit to ramp up production. Because our overhead was low, we were more agile and able to experiment in the market in ways the industry giant couldn't. Our competitor only offered two sizes in a limited number of colors and fragrances. We branched out into other sizes, fragrances, and shapes. That's something we couldn't have done if we'd had the overhead of a large manufacturing facility and staff to support. There were just two of us at the time, making and selling candles on eBay. Because we were able to tap a market already interested in the product, we saw profit quickly, but it wasn't sustainable. Remember, in a transition plan, you need a market big enough to sustain you and still be profitable. With a new baby, I wasn't able to put in enough hours myself to keep things going. I'd built myself a jobby and didn't consider hiring someone else to continue making candles because I didn't think we could afford it. We were also working out of our home and I was caring for a newborn, so I didn't feel comfortable having a stranger in my house. According to Les McCune, 80% of businesses don't make it out of early struggle, often because they're underfunded. Money runs out before the profitable, sustainable market is found. It's even harder to do that when you're juggling multiple offers, trying to figure out what sells. That's why it's important to give yourself plenty of time to transition, the 2 to 3 years of early struggle, for example. If you're ambitious or have substantial savings you can lean on, you can do it faster, provided you can find the profitable, sustainable market. There is no magic pill here, but having a single offer, two at most, makes it much easier to test, tweak, and refine your offer as you keep bringing it to market. Every great restaurant has a signature dish that becomes their calling card in the community. The chef is relentless in creating just the right blend of flavors and textures until it's as perfect as possible. They don't just jump ship to a different dish after the first attempt. If it's selling, they keep refining the recipe until it's selling like crazy. That is how you find the profitable, sustainable market. A transition plan helps you ramp up in your new enterprise while ramping down your other income source. That could be your day job, your savings account, or even a credit card you're maxing out every month. Transition plans are a type of temporary growth plan designed to get you out of one thing and into another. Eventually, I got clear that I didn't want to make candles for the rest of my life. I needed to build a different transition plan to take me out of candle making so that I wasn't working so much and making so little. That's how I ended up working with direct sellers. I started with a single product, a book called Home Party Solution that detailed how to ethically build an online business as a direct sales professional. Every bone in my fusion body was freaking out. What if it didn't work? What if no one bought this thing? That was about 10 years ago. I remember sending out my first newsletter to 7 subscribers. One of those subscribers is still on my list today. It took me 3 months to make my first sale. During that time, I was growing my audience, asking questions, and learning what people wanted from me. It took a couple of years to transition, but when I did, I was able to move out of the candle company and into more ease in my life, income, and work. That's when things in business got fun. Fun equals momentum plan. As the name suggests, this is probably the most fun time in your business. Cash is flowing freely. Business is coming in like gangbusters, and you could pretty much name your price and get it. This is the time of double or even triple digit growth, according to Les, and that's exactly what happened when I started working with direct sellers. A year after I launched the book, I added one more product to my business model, a virtual event. I had my first 5-figure month. That's 5 figures in profits, mind you. I felt like I hit the lottery. That income became the nest egg that allowed my business to break out of transition and into momentum. Think of it like a rocket ship. You've launched and gotten off the ground, but you're still trying to break free from the resistance of gravity, and you'll burn through a lot of your fuel to get into space. As a business, a momentum plan is all about focusing your business in a particular direction. You may have found a profitable, sustainable market, but you still have to do the work of selling to them on a consistent basis. Your team may grow, and along with it, your spending. Upgrade the website? Sure. Invest in some new infrastructure? Why not? Hire that director of marketing? Sounds good to me. Just watch out for the new layers of complexity, which can lead you into whitewater. While sales are booming and fun, you're probably not thinking about systems or processes, particularly if you're a chaotic. You're small and agile enough that process documents and org charts are laughable ideas. Yet, this is the very time you need to be thinking about them. Getting these kinds of repeatable tasks documented is the fastest way to speed through whitewater if your goal is predictable success. And if your goal is to stay in fun, then having these systems and processes in place allows you to know when you're growing too big and need to scale back. A momentum plan focuses on strategically expanding your audience reach or offerings, either through a new method of distribution, a new audience focus, or a new offer that complements your existing offer. There's a lot of intentional experimentation in this phase and a need to watch your budgets in the process. This isn't about creating 100 different offers, but about strategically adding to your offer portfolio in ways that increase the value of your company without increasing the workload for you, the business owner. Remember, profitable and sustainable are the operative words here. When I wrote my first book, I knew exactly who I was targeting: direct sales professionals who wanted to build their business using the internet. But when I wrote The Secret Watch, I really wasn't sure how this fit my business model. I only knew that I had to write it. It took time to not only write the book, but craft the marketing messaging to resonate with the right audience. More than 5 years after publication, I'm still collecting royalties on a book I self-published when many self-published books die on the vine after only a few months. How? The core message of my business from the very beginning has been about defining success on your own terms. As a candle maker, a coach for direct sellers, and as the founder of a business incubator, regardless of the physical offerings, that message continues to be the same. When I made that realization, it was easy to connect the dots and include the book in my business model as a back-of-the-room sales tool at speaking events. It's a great touch point for someone just getting familiar with me or my work. Fusion creatives have the hardest time with this because their skill set is so far-ranging. It can be hard to connect the dots from one offer to another in a way that makes sense to their audience. It takes time and patience to see the bigger theme that emerges after years of building a portfolio career, as Jeff Goins calls it. For me, a lifetime of working in a variety of fields became the foundation for everything that creative freedom represents: to build a noble empire, live an inspired life, and own your dreams without selling your soul. Whitewater equals decision point. When you're in whitewater, according to Les, this is the time when you, quote, can no longer improvise your way to success every day, end quote. And you can't just sell your way out of it. You've got operational problems that are hamstringing the company. There's no set way of doing things, or if there is, it's still in your head and not documented anywhere. At this point, you've got a choice: go back to fun or press on to predictable success. Either way, once you've broken into whitewater, you need to course correct. And that's when it's time to look at the final growth plan. Growth plan number 3, maintenance. It's easy to dismiss maintenance, but I assure you, this is a bona fide growth plan. An author friend once told me that there are no lateral moves, because if you stand still and stay at the same level, everyone else is moving forward, which means you are falling behind. A maintenance plan is about making sure there's enough income coming in to sustain the current level of the business without losing ground. It's not about expanding offerings or markets, but rather optimizing what's already working and culling what's not. That's why, whether you choose fun or predictable success, you'll need to shift into maintenance mode at some point. Sure, you might continue with a momentum plan to increase the scale and scope of your business once you hit predictable success, but eventually, you've got to come back to a maintenance plan or you'll fall into the decline side of the business lifecycle. Maintenance is where small tweaks make big changes. Setting up a simple system that makes it easy for you to let go of a task and delegate to another team member may take a little bit of time on the front end, but it frees you up to do the tasks that only you can do, your zone of genius. In fact, systems and processes combined with the right amount of agility and responsiveness are the key elements that keep a business out of decline and on the growth track. Why choose to stop growing? Why would a business choose to go back to fun instead of moving to predictable success? Actually, most creatives I met who are looking to be a lifestyle entrepreneur wouldn't dream of moving into predictable success. They'd stay in fun because there's no need or desire to scale up. If you want to keep things personal and intimate, or you're the sole creator and you have no desire to license your work, stay in fun. If you want to keep control of and have final approval on everything, in essence, you enjoy being the bottleneck to some degree and don't want the hassle of systems, processes, and organizational structures bogging you down, then fun is for you. Keep it simple, and you'll gladly settle for less growth over time. You've found your enoughness number, and you're happy to stay there. But if you've got a vision for a global enterprise, or even a national one, chances are good you'll want to move into predictable success. The only reason to grow to this point, according to Les, is because you want to scale up your business and become an industry leader. Many creative entrepreneurs never need to go this far, but some, like Oprah, Apple, or Michael Graves, do. That's not to say you can't be incredibly wealthy and fun. Sir Richard Branson's personal brand is worth billions, and he's decidedly in fun, while his primary company, Virgin, is actively pursuing predictable success. Theoretically, a company could stay in predictable success indefinitely, but more often, a company begins to rely too heavily on processes, policies, and systems, forsaking agility, responsiveness, and innovation, and falls into decline. The interesting thing is that you can reverse engineer these growth plans to turn these declining businesses around, but since we're only dealing with the growth side of the business in this book, we won't cover that here. I highly recommend Les's book for a full discussion on the entire business life cycle. Taking the pressure off your great work. If you're considering a transition plan, I probably don't need to warn you about the need for an alternative income source. Whether you've got a spouse, a credit card, a savings account, or a job subsidizing the startup of your creative endeavor, it's important to take the pressure off your great work to provide for you during early struggle. When I was married, my husband made it abundantly clear that the candle business had to stand on its own merits. He was not, under any circumstances, going to bankroll my entrepreneurial adventures. But he did pay the mortgage, feed and clothe the children, and make sure my business didn't need to pay me a salary to cover my daily living expenses. My business only had to take care of itself. On the one hand, this was fantastic because I knew that if the business tanked, we weren't going to be homeless. But on the other hand, because I didn't start paying myself even a modest salary, I was undercharging and creating a jobby for myself. To correct this, I created a payday for myself and started making payroll deposits into my personal account. My first paycheck was 50 cents because that's all I felt confident I could afford to pull out of the business. It was a habit. I started to remind myself that I'm running a business and a business has to make payroll. I don't care how much you pay yourself. The important thing is to get into the habit of valuing your time in the business and paying yourself a salary for being the owner of the company. If you're already doing this, you're a step ahead of many creatives I've worked with. If you're not doing it or feel like you can't afford to do it, start now. Start small, but start. Even if you move that money right back into the business, it's important to create the habit now of paying yourself as a valuable member of your company. If the company isn't making much in the way of profit right now, don't expect to cut yourself a five-figure check on payday. But if your company is flush, you'll want to pay yourself up to half the total monthly revenue as owner's pay, depending on your annual business income. I'll share more about this in a bit. As the years marched on, I went through phases of feast and famine in my business that, had I been a single mom trying to care for my family, would have put us on the streets more times than I care to count. Still, I kept up with the habit of paying myself a consistent amount of money on a regular basis, even if I rolled it right back into the business. When I became a single mom again, the first thing I had to do was find backup income, something to even out the cash flow from one month to the next so that I wasn't tempted to bleed or blame the company when my personal expenses exceeded my monthly salary. Your boss wouldn't give you a raise just because you're going through a divorce and need more income to cover all your moving and living expenses. So why would my company do that for me? Nope. In order to keep my business healthy, I had to find a supplemental income source to bridge the gap until my business income grew to meet my new lifestyle needs. Many creatives need a bridge in one form or another. So here are a few less than obvious options. Ride sharing. This was my bridge of choice. I didn't want the hassle of a part-time job, and I live in Nashville where people need a ride 24/7. Added benefit. I didn't own a car when I moved here, but I got a brand new car through the rideshare driving program. As long as I drove enough to cover the car expenses, it was mine to do with as I pleased. See also home sharing, like Airbnb or VRBO. Sponsorships. When I was about to launch the Fine Line, I put out a pre-order option that included sponsorships. people paid for more than the cost of the album and got special perks in return. Kind of like crowdfunding, but limited to my own existing audience. Cuts out the middleman. Patrons. Sites like Patreon.com have cropped up in recent years to help generate income as you grow your following, like crowdfunding, but on a monthly recurring basis. Whatever you choose, get used to the idea that your great work may not pay all the bills when you first launch, and that you'll need a separate income source to take care of you until it does. Remember, Elizabeth Gilbert didn't quit her day job until after Eat, Pray, Love was made into a feature film, and she'd already written several books by then. Sure, it's sexy to think that push-button millions are out there for the taking, and some people are positioned in a way that it does come to them fairly easily. But don't bet on luck. Hope is not a strategy. Better to plan for the worst and make the best of it than to expect miracles and be miserable when they don't come to fruition. Profit first. A few years ago, I was invited by my friend Mike Michalowicz, a linear cusp creative, to be one of the editors for his new book, Profit First. Little did he know that I would start implementing his strategies before the red ink was dry, and long before the book went to print. By the time the first edition was actually published, I had put his Profit First approach to the test for several months, and eventually became one of the first Profit First certified business coaches in the world. The idea is simple. Pay yourself and your business before the other expenses of the company. As Mike explains, standard accounting practices calculate business money this way. Income minus expenses equals profit. Mike, on the other hand, suggests we flip this scenario. Income minus profit equals expenses. Basically, you set aside a portion of your income for profit before you ever spend a dime on the expenses of the business. Then you use what's left to pay the company bills. Before I hear your objections, let's take a look at how this would play out ideally. If your company is bringing in less than $250,000 per year, you'd allocate the income in the following percentages. Profit, 5%. Owner pay, 50%. Taxes, 15%. Everything else, 30%. So if your company is bringing in $100 per month, your take-home pay is $50. Yes. Even if you plow it right back into the company, you need to practice paying yourself half of the company income. That percentage adjusts downward once your company crosses the $250,000 mark, but if you've hit that, then you probably don't need this book because you're already paying yourself a six-figure annual salary, or you should be, according to Mike's math. Yes, I hear you saying, but Lisa, I can't afford to pay myself half the company income because I have too many bills to pay. I get you. Believe me, I do. When I first read Mike's book and did my own instant assessment of my situation, I was pissed because I was in your boat. I was overspending on things I thought were necessary and important to the health and well-being of my company. Here's how I solved the problem. I changed the percentages. Gasp! I know! Shocking, right? Not really. Mike's percentages are based on an ideal. And if you're in the real world, you may not be able to start there. I sure as heck couldn't. So I started by earmarking 1% for profit and 5% for taxes. While the rest of the money went to expenses, which included a payroll I plowed right back into the company, my first quarterly profit check was less than a dollar, if I remember correctly, but at least I was getting real money. Money I didn't have to plow back into the company. Over time, I was able to correct things and increase income to the point where I could use Mike's actual percentages and not have to plow my payroll back into my company. That's when I knew I was at the end of my transition plan. If you're in transition too, there are a couple of things you need to do right now to move your business toward profitability. One, commit to paying yourself a minimum amount on a consistent basis. Even if your income for a month is zero, and that would mean you're getting 50% of nothing, pay yourself anyway, at least on paper. I know that your income could be all over the map or totally non-existent, but make the commitment to habitually sit down on payday and pay yourself something. The first few months, my paycheck was only on paper and only for $20, but creating the habit and committing to pay myself every single week lit a fire under my pants to actually bring that money in. Then, as business income grew and I could correct my percentages, my 50% of the company's monthly income was well beyond $20 every payday. Two, the other reason you want to have a regular payday is that as your company grows, you'll have to pay staff. And this will train you early on to make payday a habit, not just for you, but for your entire company. 3, adjust the percentages every 3 months, then stick with them. Don't give yourself permission to fiddle with them every month or every week. Set them, run with them for 3 months, and then make corrections. Keep moving toward the ideals, and you may find, as I did, that you can increase your profit percentage as your income goes up and overhead decreases. At one point, I was paying myself a 10% quarterly profit bonus because I had raised income and reduced expenses enough that I could put that money in the bank for future growth. 4, don't use your business as your personal banker. Treat it like a real business and let it grow on its own merit. Don't pull money out just because you need it. If you wouldn't do it for an employee, you probably shouldn't do it for yourself. Keep your personal expenses separate from your business expenses. Keep separate accounts. It may go without saying, but a lot of creatives I know don't think about this, especially if you haven't set up a legal structure for your business yet. Commingling your personal money and your business money can be illegal in some places. Keep things clean. As your business grows, you'll adjust the percentages for owner pay down and expenses up, because you'll be growing your company and needing to financially support the new complexities. Plus, you'll be bringing in more revenue, so you won't need to take half of everything to pay yourself a six-figure salary. When you're ready to grow beyond your first six figures, Profit First has a host of additional insights that will guide you as you go. Your assignment: identify each unique offering. If you are an artist, for example, identify each method and mode of art you create. If you're a retailer, you probably don't want to itemize every individual item, but rather common groups of items to make this easier to manage. On the other hand, if you're an author or recording artist with multiple titles to your credit, it makes sense to itemize each title, especially if they appeal to different audiences. Identify each unique way in which to sell those offers. You may have only one or multiple: wholesale, retail, digital, person-to-person, etc. Use a spreadsheet to lay it out in one place. The idea here is to know exactly how you make your money and all the ways in which money can come to you through your great work. Make a list of future offers as well as new outlets for existing offers. Don't forget yourself as an offering. If you're a personality, then endorsements, appearances, and performances are all elements of your business model, or could be in the future if that's your desire. Set up your profit first percentages to run with for the next 3 months. Make a commitment to stick with them for the duration. Do you need to take the pressure off your great work? What options are available to you to bridge the income gap while you work your transition plan? You know the drill by now, right? Celebrate.